We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning.
Dawson, you've been one of the loudest voices in calling for an independent probe of the state's misadventure with 38 Studios. I wonder if you're concerned that the state's lawsuit to try and cut losses from 38 Studios, if there's a settlement in that case, will that keep the full truth from coming out?
I think that is looking more and more likely to happen. Although the timely settlement of that case seems to be less and less likely to happen. So I think we're going to see status quo, more of the same, no answers on 38 Studios, at least before this election.
Do you see any other mechanism for trying to get at the root of how the state got into this mess?
Absolutely. I've always advocated for three avenues of investigating 38 Studios. The first from the legislative oversight panels, the Senate and the House have both been equipped to do so since this broke and actually should have been watching this before the failure. And the Attorney General's office really should have led a investigation and civil participation. They are not involved in the civil lawsuit at all. Finally, really as my last resort, I proposed an independent investigation by an independent commission paralleling the Tights Commission that followed the banking crisis. I haven't really received the type of legislative leadership support that I need to pass that bill.
Let's go to Scott.
Just wondering, this Ethics Commission, of course, does not have oversight powers over the legislature. And I know that you advocate for this, but I'm wondering, how can we draft legislation that would do this and yet be within the parameters of the speech and debate clause in the Supreme Court decision in the Irons case?
Well, the speech and debate clause has existed with good cause since the beginning of our republic, and that is to protect folks from political speech. You know, the jurisdiction of the Ethics Commission isn't one that's involved in partisan politics and is limited to the conflicts of interest that arise in citizen government.
So people who use the speech and debate clause, the speech and debate clause, are largely tossing up a smokescreen.
I certainly agree with that statement, and I would look at the record of the Ethics Commission while it was exercising its constitutional authority, and it was not a witch hunt. It was not an abuse of process, and I think we can expect the same type of professionalism when we restore its jurisdiction. I hope we do so soon.
We see how Gordon Fox has been a no-show as a state rep since resigning the speakership. It's too late to hold a special election to fill his seat. Meanwhile, his constituents are going unrepresented and taxpayers are paying for his legislative salary. Is there something that you think that should be done about that?
I believe if Mr. Fox's conduct is sufficient for him to resign the gavel, he should resign his seat. If he will not represent his constituents in the chamber when the business of the House is being conducted, then he should not entitle himself to the benefits of service.
And on a related note, we see how Nicholas Mattiello won the fight to succeed Fox as Speaker. How do you see the relationship changing between the House and the Senate as a result of there being a new Speaker?
Well, I'm not privy to the third floor negotiations. The Senate President hasn't brought me in for my opinion on these matters. However, I would expect, you know, the new speaker has a lot of representatives that he needs to satisfy to keep his speaker's gavel. And I think that will require an aggressive negotiating posture with the Senate. I think the Senate president has exercised a very high degree of control and influence over judicial selections. Speaker Mattiello is an attorney. That may be an area that we see a little bit of change of balance.
Looking at the Fox issue, obviously it brings up once again in Rhode Island, it raises the specter of public corruption. How would you as attorney general do more to combat, at least both in the fact and in the perception that Rhode Islanders have that too many folks in our government are corrupt?
Well, engagement is really the key. Leadership. Just like every other political office, the people of Rhode Island need to see the people they have chosen to lead actually do that. I would send a message clearly by my actions. First and foremost, as an election, as a campaign issue and an election promise, I'm going to get to the bottom of 38 Studios, civilly, criminally. I will provide the public the answers that are required, because that's certainly not the only issue that faces the AG's office or the General Assembly, but it's emblematic of everything we have done wrong to our constituents. I will do them justice. And this attorney general would have had the opportunity to do that. You can respect confidentiality of investigations by simply telling the people of Rhode Island you are on the case and you will do them justice. The same thing goes for this business up at the State House. There may be good reasons that Kilmartin was not involved in that raid on the State House. I mean, like I've told you previously, he has a very close relationship with Gordon Fox, and he probably wouldn't be the person to investigate him. But there's no excuse for our attorney general for the past several years never to be part of policing our political culture. That's got to change, and that would be a priority for me. My opponent says it's a priority for him, but he has not lived up to that promise.
We're talking here with Republican Attorney General candidate Dawson Hodgson. Dawson, you've been a proponent of imposing mandatory minimum sentences on people who illegally possess guns. That would seem to curry some support with the gun lobby because they talk about going after criminals and not law-abiding gun owners. Does that have any realistic chance of being passed this year?
I have been in the legislature long enough to not be able to predict what the legislature is going to do. I remain optimistic for its passage because that requiring anybody who possesses an illegal firearm in this state to do hard time, that sends a message that illegal gun violence is not tolerated in the state. That's not something that's meant to simply appeal to Second Amendment supporters. That's meant to appeal to my friends in South Providence and in this city who have gunfire going off in their neighborhood at night. We need to send the message that if you see an illegal gun, you aren't even going to touch it because you know you're going to jail. That's a policy that I can implement as the Attorney General through my sentencing priorities and making it a personal priority of my administration. As a state senator, I'm advocating for it in that venue now, but it's something I'll continue for the next 4 years.
Where's the opposition coming from on that?
Nobody's articulated opposition to the bill. However, we have a somewhat cloudy way of seeing how bills make it through the process.
What other gun control measures could you support that would help get guns off the streets?
Well, this doesn't relate to getting guns off the streets, but I absolutely want to make it a priority of getting mental health records of dangerousness into the national background check system. That's been a priority of mine since prior to the Newtown tragedy, and I think that has to be the number one priority. My analysis of all firearms laws has two touchstones. First, the proposal has to keep people safer. Not just feel good, but truly has to have a measurable impact in keeping people safer. And then the second is it does have to accord with the rights and traditions of a free society. That's the Constitution and the Second Amendment. Those are tough touchstones, but when you reach them, then I think you've probably got a good law, and that's what I would support.
You're pursuing an up or out strategy by running for Attorney General, in part because you say you can't afford to make it on what you receive as a state senator. Is that an argument for increasing the salary for state legislators in Rhode Island?
I think Rhode Island's General Assembly is structurally conflicted. What private sector employer can afford to subsidize their workers to go work 40 hours a week, 50 hours a week like I put in the Assembly when they have a business to run? The only employers that can do that are public sector employers. The only other people that can afford to serve are either rich or retired. My perspective in government is of somebody who has their entire professional life in front of them. My kids have their upbringing and hopefully their education and professional life in front of them here. That's a perspective that is very difficult to represent if you also have to go out and earn a living. So now that I'm leaving, I'd probably support some type of full-time General Assembly, downsized, and really professionalize it. Make sure we have policy expertise and support in place.
What do you think about legalizing marijuana? We've seen that a couple of states have done this so far, Colorado and Washington State. There's been a debate up at the State House here in Rhode Island.
I see the merits in the proposal. I also see the risks that have been articulated. It's been just over 1 year since the decriminalization statute took effect in Rhode Island for less than 1 ounce of marijuana. My view is let's wait and see, one, what the Washington and Colorado experience is, and also what's the Rhode Island experience with decriminalization? Is it what was promised? Do we need to make a change? Like all laws, how are they working? Constantly reevaluate and modify as necessary.
The Attorney General has some consumer advocacy responsibilities. So if you were Attorney General, what would your stance be on payday lending?
I'm a co-sponsor of the payday lending reform bill put in by Senator Pichardo. I think there is a balance to be struck. I'm certainly willing to negotiate about what that is. But we need to protect people who are part of our economy but may not have the sophistication to protect themselves financially. Businessmen are pursuing business, in accordance with the laws of this state, and if they follow the guidelines we set them, I'm not going to judge them, because we can say the same thing about politicians and the way politicians raise money.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you.
And Republican Attorney General candidate, State Senator Dawson Hodgson.
It's been my pleasure. Great day, everybody.